Welcome to the Midnight Ride Podcast. This is Hank Alexander. I will be taking you through the next half hour of news and information around the New England Revolution. And we are going to talk about last night's terrible performance in Salt Lake City in a minute or two, but a couple of logistics. This is a brand new podcast, and I'm trying it out for the first time. Hopefully we'll get some good feedback later on, and we can incorporate that into the show. Also, looking to reach out to some other fans of the Revolution and maybe even some sports writers as well. All that's to come in future weeks. We're going to take a short break right now. And when we come back, we'll talk about not only the game in Salt Lake City, but we'll cover the previous game in DC United. And then we'll get a little bit into a preview of next week's game against Houston and cover the injury list for the Revolution. All that and more right after this little break. So stay tuned. So we're back, and let's get right into it with a recap of Saturday night's game in Salt Lake City. As Jeff Lorenowitz said, there were no positives to take away from that game. It's one of the few perfect quotes that sums up the whole debacle out at Rio Tinto Stadium. Coming into the match off of the draw at DC United, which should have been a win for the Revolution. It was a beautiful cross played by Steve Ralston into Shawry Joseph, who on a rare occasion actually moved forward to head the ball in, only to surrender a goal in the 90th minute thanks to Ben Olsen getting on the end of a nice cross after a questionable free kick awarded to Fred after a very suspect dive. But the real key there was Jeff Lorenowitz's substitution for Pat Phelan. And Pat Phelan still trying to find his way on the team, maybe made a mistake, got a little bit out of position, and it, from my perspective, actually shielded the ball as it was going across the face of the goal and ended up knocking it in himself. And from my opinion, that should have been an own goal on Pat Phelan, because it looked to me as if Brad Knighton could have made a play on it, but Phelan just went right in and unfortunately could not make a play on the ball and basically blocked it into the goal with his chest. Well, we'll take a draw on the road, which is better than what we got at Salt Lake, that's for sure. So let's move on to that game, and let's go quickly through the lineup there. In goal for his fourth start of the season was Brad Knighton, who's been doing an admirable job in place of the injured Matt Reese. In the back line, we had Chris Tierney at left back, Jay Heaps partnering alongside Darius Barnes, rookie, at center back. And then on the right back, we have Amici Igwe. So in the midfield at right wing, we had Sani Niasse. And in the middle, we had Jeff Lorenowitz and Shawry Joseph, who was filling in as captain for the injured Steve Ralston, who was out with an adductor strain. And on the left wing, we had Wells Thompson. And we'll get back to that in a little bit. But up front, we had Kelly Dubé and Kenny Mansali. Now, the issue here with this lineup, and the only issue I have, is that Chris Tierney is a liability at left back. He is not defensively minded. He does not know the position very well. And as much as he plays back there for Steve Nichol, he is a risk because he is uncomfortable in that position. He is not aggressive on the ball. He immediately retreats into a shell and gets turned way too many times. The upshot is that you'd be better off playing a three-man back line with Jay Heaps at left back or Amichi Egwe at left back and Darius Barnes in the middle, and then either Amichi Egwe or Jay Heaps on right back. But Chris Tierney at left back does not work. And I actually did some analysis on this, and last season there were more goals scored against the Revolution when Tierney was at left back than when there was with Amichi Egwe at left back. So leave that aside. So you could have moved Chris Tierney up into a left wing position and gone with a 3-5-2 and maybe have Wells Thompson play in the middle a bit more, or even have a 3-4-3 where you have Wells Thompson and then you have Chris Tierney playing up front on the left along those lines. The other option is to take out Tierney altogether and save him for maybe a late game replacement or something along those lines. You had Mike Vadira on the bench, and Mike Vadira actually came in as a sub for Kelly Dubé later in the game when we were already down a couple of goals, I believe. And at that point, I don't really know what Steve Nichol was thinking. I think at that point he was trying to get a little bit more possession in the midfield where we were obviously losing the ball. A little bit more on the possession in the midfield. I didn't count how many times Shalrie Joseph gave up the ball, but it was clear to me that it was not his best game last night. He obviously was a bit jet-lagged or tired. Maybe it was the altitude. I don't want to use that as an excuse, but he looked slow on the ball. He looked lazy on the ball, and I really like Shalrie Joseph as a player when he's fit and when he's on, and even when he moves forward into an attacking role, he is very good. I don't think he is comfortable in a 4-4-2. We've seen it time and time again. He is not the best player in a 4-4-2. I don't think he knows his role in a 4-4-2. When you have two defensive midfielders like Jeff Larenowitz and Shalrie Joseph playing in a 4-4-2, one of them has to move forward. And last night, neither of them moved forward. Sometimes you'll see Shalrie Joseph move up, especially when Steve Ralston's on the pitch, because I think he becomes more comfortable when Steve Ralston's on the pitch. When Ralston's not on the pitch, Shalrie tends to take on a little bit more responsibility. He gets more defensive. He doesn't move forward. And that's where we lost the game last night. No consistent possession through the midfield, and they left their rookie center back, Darius Barnes, wide open. And he did well, I have to say. As far as rookie center back goes, he did well on numerous occasions where he actually cleared the ball, stepped in front of the ball at the right time. But set pieces, two goals off of a corner kick, another goal from Andy Williams late in the match, all off of set pieces. Why were we letting them down in that end of the field? That is not the Revolution's game. The Revolution's game is to control the ball in the midfield and pass it up to the wings and then funnel it into the middle. Maybe the Real Salt Lake knows this, as probably does most of the league, because Nichol's tactics haven't changed much. And with the right personnel, it is very effective. I do think that missing Steve Ralston was a huge blow for the Revolution. And with Ralston, we might have done a bit more possession in the midfield and been able to control the bleeding, shall we say. Because once they opened us up, there was no stopping Real Salt Lake. They completely dominated that second half. Six goals in the second half for Real Salt Lake. And let's just go over those goals real fast. We had first goal from Jemison Olave from Javier Morales. Excellent player, Morales. He really imposed his will on the game and controlled the midfield for Real Salt Lake, as well as setting up a number of opportunities for them to score with some beautiful crosses into the midfield. And we were lucky to get out of the first half score of 0-0 because Morales was looking dangerous. But to move on to the actual plays that scored, he had a corner kick where Olave was able to convert. Another corner kick, another beautiful cross from Morales, which went all the way through to a wide open Clint Mathis, which has got to be goal of the week, if not goal of the year. That was a fantastic goal from Clint Mathis. Then a couple of goals in the run of play where you had Moisissian score, and then you had another goal from Escalada, who was a substitute, came in. And even after they made the substitutes, you thought maybe that they were going to let it go a little bit, let it flow a little bit, maybe not push as much. Well, no, RSL did not let up. And you can't fault them for that. They are out there to win. They are out there to play soccer. And they proved that they were the best team by far. So after Escalada's goal, you had Andy Williams, who took a free kick and knocked one back into the upper back post there. Another beautiful goal. And then Robbie Finley at the end with an assist off of Andy Williams to wrap up the scoring. They were fantastic. They did not let up, and they played their game. And you have to give them all the credit in the world. New England Revolution, on the other hand, never found their game. And I don't know if it was the altitude. Like I said, I don't want to make any excuses, but their game was non-existent, and you can only point to one player, really, and that's Shalrie Joseph. Shalrie, who is my favorite midfielder, probably next to Steve Ralston. But let's face it, he is not Steve Ralston. Going forward, I have to question his ability to lead this team as team captain. Even without Steve Ralston in the lineup, I'm thinking that perhaps Jay Heaps would be a better captain. The point being, Shalrie Joseph, I think, feels too much responsibility when he's team captain. And when they're in a 4-4-2, he gets pressure that I think he comes from himself, really. But the pressure on him to manage the game as well as manage the team from a captain's perspective is not working, in my opinion. So enough of that. We'll move away from that game. Let's put that one away, and we'll move on to a preview of next week's game right after this short little break. Yes, the dulcet tones of Mr. George Benn. I'd like to give a little thank you to Pete Brown and Graham Bell at CSRN, who not only introduced me to George Benn, but introduced me to radio, soccer podcasting, the whole works. So big shout out to you guys. That little snippet of George Benn goes out to you. And while we're on the topic of CSRN, we have another good friend from CSRN, the Twigster, who's a resident of Denmark, but is English-born and Leeds United through and through. Twigster also happens to be a very passionate New England Revolution fan. And the one thing that Twigster and I seem to differ on season in, season out, is our opinion of Mr. Steve Nichol. And I have to say, Twigster is pretty close when it comes to fanaticism. However, I wanted to let him know that his opinions are shared, not necessarily by me, but by a sports columnist who covers the New England Revolution and also the Boston Breakers, the WPS, the women's professional soccer team. And her name is L.E. Eisenmenger. And you can read L.E. Eisenmenger's column on the Boston Pro Soccer Examiner in the sports section of the Examiner. The website is www.examiner.com. She also has written for SoccerLens.com and AmericanSoccerNews.com, as well as ThisIsAmericanSoccer.com. And you can follow her on Twitter at Madison Road. That's twitter.com/Madison Road. And she wrote a great article on the rout of the New England Revolution, paraphrasing her title, Real Salt Lake Rout New England Revolution 6-0. And she is very much in Twixter's camp when it comes to Mr. Steve Nichol and Mr. Paul Mariner, specifically calling out the lack of veteran presence on the pitch and putting the onus squarely on the coach's shoulders. Now, I have to admit that her article is very, very good and very well written, and I agree with her to an extent. I'm not willing to put the entire blame on Steve Nichol's shoulders because of the overwhelming injuries that the New England Revolution are facing at the moment. With the healthy players that Steve Nichol has in place right now, I think he fielded the best team that he could. And let's look at the injuries real fast. Taylor Twellman, huge presence missed. Steve Ralston, huge presence missed. Chris Albright, solid veteran at right back, very sorely missed. And, of course, you had Matt Rhys, another veteran, sorely missed. And with those four people available to Steve Nichol, there is no way that they score 6 goals in one half on the Revolution. I refuse to accept that with those four players in the lineup, you would get the same result that they got last Saturday night. I just don't see that happening. And while I don't agree with the lineup that Nichol put out on the field, I can't blame him for the performance of the players on the pitch. With players like Jeff Lorenowitz and Shawrie Joseph out on the pitch, along with Jay Heaps, and Wells Thompson's no rookie, and Mansali and Nyasi have been around for a little while, but I just can't blame Steve Nichol for everything we saw last Saturday night. The players were not into it, and Jay Heaps at one point was standing in the middle of the field with his hand up in the air, calling for an offside trap, not running with the ball, just assuming that the play was offsides, when in fact Amichi Egwe, who was behind him, was holding the player on. He looked like an idiot standing out there by himself, and that's just the sign of a tired player, somebody that wasn't engaged in the game. And Twigster will be the first one to say that it's the manager's responsibility to make sure that the players are engaged in the game. I can say to Twigster that there's only so much that the manager can do, and then the players have to perform on the pitch. By the way, you can hear more from Twigster on his own podcast, Glory Glory Leeds. That's available on CSRNUSA.com. So big shout out to Twigster, and a big shout out to Leeds United. And let's move on to the preview for next week on Sunday, May 3rd. At Gillette Stadium in Foxborough, Massachusetts, the New England Revolution take on the Houston Dynamo, who have been off to a somewhat rocky start, which, over the last few seasons, is pretty true to form. However, I'm sure that Coach Dominic Kinnear will get the boys from Houston up and running, and before you know it, they'll be at the top of the table and challenging once again for an MLS Cup spot. The real question about Houston this season is how they are going to perform on the pitch without their star playmaker, Mr. Dwayne DeRosario, who, as a Canadian, had been longing to go back to Canada and finally got his wish this past offseason when Houston traded him to Toronto. Looking at the rest of their lineup, it's pretty solid the whole way through. They've got in goal Mr. Pat Onstad, who is probably the second oldest person in the world of MLS, that is, 41 years old. They've also got some fantastic forward by the name of Brian Ching, who will live forever in infamy in the eyes of the New England Revolution after he scored the equalizing goal in the 2006 the 2006 MLS Cup final, just 72 seconds after Taylor Twellman had put the Revolution ahead in the final half of extra time. It hurts me just to talk about it, so I'm going to move on. But in terms of injuries for the Houston Dynamo, the only injury they have on their roster is Mr. Eddie Robinson, who is a big loss for them. He is a huge defensive presence and is somewhat aggressive and a bit of a wild card when it comes to maybe getting some yellow cards and red cards and from his aggressive style of play. But he will be sorely missed. Looking at the rest of their roster in the defense, they do have Bobby Boswell, Wade Barrett. They also have Craig Weibel. These are all familiar names to everybody. Stuart Holden shows a lot of promise in the midfield for the Dynamo. And you have to also take a look at Corey Ash. And he's going to probably cause some problems for the Revolution. He's quick and speedy. So they've got a formidable lineup. And, however, their record so far, they only have one win on the season and out of five games, like the Revolution, they have two draws and two losses, with the losses coming against San Jose and DC United. So they're pretty much in the same boat as the New England Revolution, and you can't write this off as a automatic win, especially with the Houston Dynamo, because they do have a deep squad and they are very strong. However, it is a home game. It's only our second home game of the season, so hopefully that'll work in our favor. Hopefully the boys are back from Real Salt Lake and have recovered from the tar and feathering that Mr. Nichols surely put upon them, and getting ready for the game this next week. Okay, let's take another break here, and when we come back, we'll run through the New England Revolution injury report. So stick around. Girl, you thought you found the answer on that magic carpet ride last night. But when you wake up in the morning, the world still gets you uptight. Well, there's nothing better you ain't tried to fill the emptiness inside. When you come back down, girl, still ain't feeling right. Don't it seem like it's just keep getting harder to find, and all your kicks ain't bringing you peace of mind. Before you find out it's too late, girl, you better get straight. No, but not with kicks. You just need taking it back with Paul Revere and the Raiders. A little Midnight Ride reference there. Okay, so we're back with the final segment of the Midnight Ride podcast, and let's take a quick look at the New England Revolution injury report. And looking at the league, as far as injuries go, The New England Revolution are probably the worst of the bunch. Maybe Chivas USA has as many, but definitely New England is topping the charts. So let's get right into it. Chris Albright at right back is recovering from a surgery on his meniscus. He had a lateral meniscus tear, so he's out for another 6 to 8 weeks. Kevin Olsen is also at right back. He's still nursing a hamstring strain. We also are still missing Mr. Gabriel Badilla, who was supposed to be the replacement for Mr. Michael Parkhurst, who unfortunately left us to pursue a career in European soccer, specifically in Denmark. And Mauricio Castro is also nursing a hamstring strain. And we all know about Mr. Taylor Twellman, who last year took a wallop from Steve Cronin in the game against the Galaxy and then continued to play off and on for the rest of the season, not realizing that he was probably doing himself some more harm than good. He dislocated a vertebrae in his neck, and it's been causing him concussion-like symptoms, as well as some disorientation and some nausea, all that stuff that goes along with that. But basically, he's got to strengthen up those neck muscles to help support that dislocated vertebrae. So hopefully we can expect him back in a few more weeks. Sooner the better, in my opinion, there. Listed as doubtful, we have Mr. Steve Ralston, who picked up an adductor strain last week, and then listed as probable, Kelly Dubé, still nursing a sore knee, and Jeff Larenowitz with a bad hip. And Matt Reese is still fighting off some knee inflammation. And I'm wondering if he's listed as probable. Hopefully he'll be back in the lineup this week. Brad Knighton did a fantastic job in Matt's absence. However, I am looking forward to Matt's return against Houston. And that will do it for this first episode of the Midnight Ride podcast. I hope you all enjoyed it. You can follow along with my blog, which is at revsmidnightride.blogspot.com. And while you're out there, you might as well check out some of my other favorite blogs, specifically Ginge Talks the Footy at gingetalksthefooty.com and matchfitusa.com, as well as the other podcast, which I am somewhat associated with, which is winninguglyradio.com. So check out all three of those. Fabulous resource for soccer. Also, you can follow me on Twitter. It's twitter.com/Henry5. And all of my contact information is available on those websites. So, again, I hope you enjoyed it. It's been a blast. It's been an experience. Hopefully this will go smoother in future weeks. And until then, have a good time all the time. That's my philosophy. Cheers, everybody.